This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and you heard that right, Freedom From Religion. This is radio for the rest of us, and that means you, you godless infidel.
I'm Dan Barker, the friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. We're into our eighth year of broadcasting Free Thought Radio. I'm co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation with Annie Laurie. We are a nonprofit, and you heard that right. That first word is spelled non, P-R-O-P-H-E-T, a nonprofit. We are atheists and agnostics, secular humanists, non-believers, none of the aboves, working to keep religion out of government and to promote the use of reason in coming to conclusions about religion.
Today is the October 12th, 2013 broadcast. Welcome also to listeners in various stations in California, New York, Michigan, Missouri, and Texas. And if you are a podcast listener and you don't have any Free Thought Radio in your community, we offer this show for free. Contact us. We'd love to get this back on more stations as we used to be on over 35.
In on-air America. Today, we're going to be talking with a member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, a professor emeritus. Brian Bolton is the person who underwrites the Freedom From Religion Foundation's new essay competition for graduate students. And we might call him a fairy non-godfather in many other ways as well. Brian Bolton is an author. He's a scholar. He's a debater on religion. You've read some of his articles periodically in Free Thought Today. As a psychologist, Brian Bolton has debunked the idea that people who pray are healthier than those who do not. So we'll be talking about a variety of topics with Professor Bolton on the second half of today's show. And as you know, this show, Free Thought Radio and FFRF, we like to pay secular homage to, how do you say it? Homage,
secular, homage, doesn't matter.
Secular respect to free-thinking songwriters and composers. And today is the anniversary of the birth of the British composer Ralph Vaughan Williams. He was born in 1872. His first name is spelled like Ralph, but they pronounce it Ralph Vaughan Williams.
That's a British pronunciation.
He was born in England. He was actually a great-nephew of Charles Darwin. He had spent time in Charles Darwin's home in Down. Ralph Vaughan Williams composed orchestras, hymns, chamber music, operas, and symphonies. His work included such memorable pieces as Fantasia on Greensleeves, The Lark Ascending, which was played at one of the presidential inaugurations, Fantasia on a Theme by Thomas Tallis. Vaughan Williams wrote 9 symphonies, including a C symphony, which we'll hear a little bit of that today going out of one of the segments, a pastoral symphony, and symphony number 4. Ralph Vaughan Williams was not a believer. In Ursula Vaughan Williams' biography of her late husband, she wrote, "He was an atheist during his later years at Charterhouse and at Cambridge, though he later drifted into a cheerful agnosticism. He was never a professing Christian." And Vaughan Williams actually wrote some of the hymns in the English hymnal. I saw one there in Oxford. As an atheist, he wrote some of the hymns. And he said, Ralph Vaughan Williams said, "There's no reason why an atheist cannot write a good mass. If you're going to go to church, you may as well listen to good music." So listen to the C Symphony, and later we'll hear a little bit of The Wasps as we go out of today's segments.
And then we traditionally play for all our listeners, the Moment of Bedlam, in case you weren't able to attend our annual convention. We just came out of our 36th annual national convention 2 weekends ago in Madison, Wisconsin. And this is the Moment of Bedlam. It's a moment that my mother, Ann Gaylor, suggested as a contrast to prayer, especially moments of silence or prayer in public schools. Why not have a moment of bedlam? It's a joke. And at the non-prayer breakfast, where all we do is eat, we are preceded with this moment of bedlam, and here's the last one.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, can we have your attention? We cannot start the breakfast until it is properly consecrated. We must have a blessing before we eat the meal this morning. Before we do that, I want to tell you there's going to be a little surprise event. If you come early to this morning session, you can be a witness to a free thought wedding. So show up about 5 or 10 minutes early. But first, before we eat, as you know, we have our non-prayer breakfast. And of course, we always invite the governor and the mayor. Is the governor here? And instead of a moment of silence or a prayer, we have a moment of bedlam. So think of some way to make a proper consecrated bedlam noise. This is a way for you to fight back. After all those times you've gone to these meetings, government or group meetings, and somebody stands up inappropriately and prays at your meeting to their God, and how do you feel? What do? You bow your head? Do you look around for the other one person? So here's your chance to have not a moment of silence, but to consecrate our breakfast today with a true free thought moment of bedlam. Are you ready?
Yes.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
That's always one of the funnest things I get to do every year, is that moment of bedlam. And people look forward to it. They come to breakfast just for that. You heard all the members cheering. And today, our members are cheering for another reason, cheering over the Freedom From Religion Foundation's latest court victory. FFRF and the ACLU of Ohio have formally settled that Jackson Jesus case in an Ohio school. You heard us talk about it in the past. The Jackson City School District has officially agreed not to repost a portrait of Jesus in the public schools. If you're a regular listener, you recall FFRF staff attorney first wrote...
Rebecca Markert.
She first wrote a letter back in January on behalf of local parents with students in that school. The school district superintendent, Phil Howard, responded with a vow that the Head of Christ painting would only be removed with a court order. That order now comes in the form of a consent decree signed by all parties in the last week's mandate that the portrait be permanently removed from school property. The parties agreed to a financial settlement requiring the school to pay the plaintiffs a combination of damages and legal fees totaling nearly six figures. FFRF's portion was four figures, very minor. The school district worked with an upstart Texas religious right group called the Liberty Institute that proclaims on its website, "We have never lost a case to the ACLU or the Freedom From Religion Foundation." Actually, this was FFRF's first case in which the Liberty Institute had interceded, by the way.
That's quite a weird thing to brag. Yeah, if you've never been involved in litigation with someone, sure, you could say, "We've never lost a case to them."
Well, now they can say, "We've never won a case to them." Negotiations, you probably remember, were stalled when it was learned that the portrait had never actually been removed from the school. They put it in a closet, and then it was brought out from time to time for a prayer meeting or...
Well, it was at the National Day of Prayer, and principals and the administrators showed up at the flagpole with students with that crazy Head of Christ painting that had been put in the art closet. And then they also loaned it to the city for their National Day of Prayer ritual. So... we had to negotiate quite a bit after that.
Well, the case is over, and it's a victory. The case was before Judge Algernon Marbley in U.S. District Court in the Southern District of Ohio.
So that lawsuit should never have been necessary, but we are delighted that reason has prevailed. And speaking of reason, today, October 12th, marks the 321st anniversary of the cessation of the Salem witch trials. On this date in history, Governor William Phipps of the colony of Massachusetts declared that spectral evidence would no longer be admissible in court. That was the first time in history anyone had ever done that.
What's spectral evidence?
That witches and ghosts and demons said this to me, or I saw ghosts and demons and witches and so on. And that terminated the infamous Salem witch trials. And Governor Phipps ordered, and as I said, this was the first such order in history, that evidence admitted in court must be observable by the ordinary senses, measurable and replicable, hence, you know, the scientific method. And this declaration did end those notorious trials, since all of those convictions had invoked evidence, in quotes, such as voices from a deity or specters, including angels and devils.
Well, how convenient, right?
And you'll remember that 20 persons were condemned and cruelly executed on our continent prior to this declaration. 19 were hanged, one was pressed to death, if you can imagine. Governor Phipps wrote that he stopped the proceedings because I saw many innocent persons might otherwise perish, including 52 people with pending cases of witchcraft. If he had not stepped up, there would have been over 70 such deaths on our continent.
Well, some of them would have been ancestors of people alive today, obviously.
All were released within 3 months of his ruling. So, FFRF, at the instigation of one of our members back in the early 1990s, a very brilliant member, decided to declare October 12th to be Free Thought Day. And we have issued wording that could be put in the terms of a resolution, could be by a governor, a mayor. Some of our members around the country have had this declared Free Thought Day, and I'm going to read that resolution. It's brief. Whereas, of all the watersheds of human history, surely one of the most seminal in terms of the elevation of thought from the depths of primal instincts was Governor Phipps' October 12, 1692 edict. Whereas, there may be no single day of more importance in tracing the history of human enlightenment and the adoption of the scientific method than October 12, 1692. Whereas there have been many holidays for saints and superstition, but never one commemorating reason, free thought, and state church separation, we therefore declare October 12th Free Thought Day.
Hear, hear. So, in this country anyway, we are not putting women to death as witches anymore. But we're still fighting superstition, the lingering artifacts of the old superstitions, including superstitions supported by our government. You may have seen the interview that came out this past week about one of our Supreme Court's six Catholic judges, in fact, the most Catholic judge, and that would be Antonin Scalia. Did you catch his comments about believing in the devil? Scalia said, and this is a quote, "The devil, he's a real person. Hey, come on, that's standard Catholic doctrine. Every Catholic believer believes that." And when the interviewer asked him why there's not a lot of evidence for the devil anymore, Scalia replied, "It's because he's smart. What he's doing now is getting people not to believe in him or in God." Although Scalia quickly denied it, he's equating atheism with the work of the devil. And I don't think an atheist can have a fair hearing under him if we were to go to that court again. I think he ought to recuse himself from the Greece, New York prayer case going before his court next month, with an atheist plaintiff, by the way. In fact, a plaintiff who is a member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. So here we have Scalia, still stuck in the 1600s, pre-Enlightenment, getting a chance to rule on the constitutionality of government prayer soon. That's why we need a Free Thought Day, not once a year, but 365.4 days a year. Beware of dogma, indeed.
And we are going out, coming back in a jiffy, but going out with Rayfan Williams' C Symphony, The Waves.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible It ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Last week, we talked about a Freedom From Religion Foundation complaint in Franklin County, Tennessee, where the PTA was starting with a prayer. And you might remember we played a news story about it where the woman says, if we don't pray, then God won't get the glory. We've complained. People have complained about it. Here is a follow-up story to that same issue. And you will hear Franklin County School Board member Christopher McDonough suggesting that a moment of silence would make the non-Christians in the room feel comfortable. And then you will hear, listen closely, you'll hear members of the audience shouting out, but majority rules.
It all began with a warning from the Madison, Wisconsin-based Freedom From Religion Foundation to the Franklin County PTO. And it said, in essence, that any kind of prayer before a meeting violates separation of church and state. Well, the folks here in Franklin tonight say this is a fight they didn't pick, but they intend to win it. The PTO meets after school hours. Nonetheless, prayers before the meeting offended a few parents. That's when the Freedom From Religion Foundation stepped in a few weeks ago, sending a letter to the school board. It was read by the director of schools tonight. It said in part,
we ask that you discontinue the practice of prayer before the PTO meetings.
This controversy has been festering for weeks in a county where religion is an important part of people's lives.
There are a lot of good people in this county. They believe in prayer here. They don't believe in letting them outside people come in here and tell us what to do.
One board member offered an alternative, a moment of silence. It was not a popular idea.
There are people in this county who do not go to churches, who do not believe the same things you do. And we have to make it possible for those people to feel comfortable in the room as well. No, the majority doesn't. No, it does not.
And that is a major misconception that majority rules in matters of personal conscience. That's why we have a Bill of Rights. In another recent FFRF complaint taken by FFRF staff attorney Andrew Seidel, a pastor was preaching during a public school's 9/11 ceremony, and here's coverage from WCRB3. Tennessee.
A local pastor and the Hamilton County School District are certainly on the radar of the organization known as the Freedom From Religion Foundation. This about a month after the pastor gave a speech at Sail Creek School's 9/11 remembrance ceremony.
Did I mention God in the speech that day in 7 minutes? I sure did.
Pastor Alan Stewart was trying to inspire students during a 9/11 speech at Sail Creek Middle High School. Now that speech has him and the Hamilton County Board of Education in the crosshairs of a national group that works against this sort of thing. The Freedom For Religion Foundation wrote to the school board calling Stewart's speech a, quote, serious concern. The letter claims someone at the school complained. The foundation's lawyer, Andrew Seidel, wrote in the letter there were numerous quotations from the Bible. The letter went on to say having Stewart there was divisive and isolating.
And inviting a pastor in the first place should have been a red flag for the school. Pastors only speak about religious issues for the most part.
Stewart responded to the letter himself, saying religion has been part of this area's community since it began.
It may be ingrained in the community, but the Constitution prohibits religion from being espoused in the schools.
After the letter, the school system says it has retrained educators about keeping those separate.
And the school system held a training regarding the situation, and the foundation says they consider this a win for their organization. Now, Stewart says he's not received any response, but the community has been supportive. Well, I'm in the studio, Antoine Harris, Channel 3 Eyewitness News.
So that's one of our hundreds and hundreds of complaints that have gone out from
and that's something
our
of a victory.
Legal attorneys.
They're training the staff about being sensitive to these things. So
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Stay tuned. We're going to be talking with a very generous, very active member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
A longtime member and someone who has done a lot of research with the government. He's a professor emeritus, and he's done a lot of research in public health and other issues, government-sponsored research and scholarship for 35 years. And we're going to be talking about the inefficacy of prayer as medicine.
And like a lot of you listeners, Brian Bolton has very generously supported our building expansion project, which is now underway.
And we will have the executive wing named the Brian Bolton Executive Wing and the new addition. And it's a hurry up and wait. Those of you in Madison, Wisconsin can see a great big hole. But there's been a couple of glitches, but they're going to be full steam ahead next week. And we'll be seeing a 5-story addition going up soon. including the Brian Bolton Executive Wing.
And there's still time for you to get your name on a paving stone or on one of the pretty tiles in the vestibule or on one of the wall of honor. We have a wall honoring major donors to the building expansion. So if you want to be a part of Free Thought History, you can do like Brian Bolton and support the FFRF's Building Expansion Fund.
At FFRF.org. And we'll be back to talk with Brian Bolton about why prayer doesn't work and why this ain't a Christian nation.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back to Radio as Godless as Our Constitution, Free Thought Radio. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are delighted to have on the phone with us from Texas a very longtime FFF member, a lifetime member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, a psychologist, a professor emeritus from the University of Arkansas. Professor Brian Bolton got his undergrad degree in mathematics at the University of Kansas City and his PhD here in Madison, Wisconsin, at the University of Wisconsin. And he's an author, scholar, and a benefactor. And this is the third year in a row that FFRF has sponsored a new essay competition just for grad students. And Professor Bolton has personally underwritten all of those scholarships going out to graduate students. So we're very grateful. And the executive wing of FFRF's upcoming new Free Thought Hall, which is being born again next year, that addition will be named the Brian Bolton Executive Wing, and you can guess why. So this is a free thinker who makes a difference in our lives and in the lives of many students, and is also a debater on issues such as the inefficacy of prayer, why the United States is not a Christian nation. So welcome to Free Thought Radio, Brian.
Thank you very much, Annie Laurie. I appreciate the nice introduction. It's good to be with you.
Now, before we talk about some of these issues, what is your background on religion?
I attended Sunday school from about age 4 to 8 at a little Presbyterian church, the South Ridge Presbyterian Church in Fairway, Kansas. And to the best of my recollection, I enjoyed it. Of course, I wasn't young enough to be critical. And then when we moved and I started attending another Presbyterian church, Sunday school really, I began to lose interest. And by age 12, I was very resistant. I can't say that it was for intellectual reasons. I just didn't form any attachment. So since then, I have not been a believer, have not been religious. In fact, I'd have to say, even when I was younger, I simply did not have the intellectual capacity to be a religious person.
That's a good way to put it, because you are a very intelligent, intellectual thinker.
Well, that's right, but that comes with maturity. I don't think I matured until I was in college and probably well after that. I was never skeptical of religion. I just didn't want to have anything to do with it. In fact, I didn't become a skeptic and an aggressive atheist until I was about 40 and happened to watch Jim Baker and Tammy on the show one morning, and I realized that they and Jimmy Swaggart and Pat Robertson and others were attacking me. And that's when I became an activist, and that was about 1980. In the early 1980s, I started writing and speaking, and that was the beginning of my career as an unbeliever.
Now, when you were in college, Brian, I think it's safe to say there was no essay competition for undergrads or grads rewarding freethinking by students. I'm sure you never ran into that concept.
Not at all. There was simply, in fact, I wasn't even aware that unbelievers were organized. I had never heard of any organizations. I can honestly say I was essentially ignorant of all of the unbelieving, free thought, agnostic communities until I was well into my 30s.
Well, I think the Freedom From Religion Foundation was probably the first group to have an annual essay competition for students. And I think we started our competition back in 1977. So way too late to help you.
Yeah, very much. And at that time, when I was an undergraduate and graduate, and even in my 20s and 30s, I would not have entered a competition. So even if it had been available, it just wasn't something that was on the radar for me because I was busy with my academic career.
So, Brian, you came forward. I remember we put out a membership appeal, and I pointed out that we were getting older students entering our college competition, and I didn't think it was quite fair for 19-year-olds to be judged with 29-year-olds or even 39-year-olds. And I let members know we'd like to start a third essay competition. We have one for college-bound high school seniors, and then we have one for ongoing college students. And I thought it was time to have one for graduate students and older graduate students, and you stepped up to the plate. So why that commitment?
It seemed to me that it was an appropriate population to target. Of course, I think we should target all populations because many people lose the faith, convert to unbelief in their 40s and 50s. So it just seemed to me that targeting an older group was entirely appropriate, and of course I was happy to make my contribution.
And well, this really helps them with their college career. It's expensive to go to college, so this is a real help to free-thinking students.
And also just it's a reward. It's a way to reward critical thinking by college students because the world is full of religious groups that reward students for being like sheep.
Hmm. Have you seen them? Go ahead.
Sure. They proselytize, and therefore I don't think there's anything wrong with we in the free thought community doing pretty much the same thing, and these essay competitions have really served a purpose. I think I told Annie Laurie yesterday I was very pleased with the quality of the winning essays in this year's competition.
So you've seen this year's winners, Chris Calvi and the others.
Yes, I have.
And we did ask them this year to talk about why America is not a Christian nation, and I know that is a topic dear to your heart. But I thought before we got to that, you've done a lot of writing and research on the efficacy, so-called efficacy of prayer. And I wondered if we could talk a little bit about all of that.
Sure, absolutely. Did you want me just to start with a few statements?
Well, you wrote an essay for us in Free Thought today, Does God Answer Prayer?
That's
and
right.
Do you remember what you said, or shall I give you some prompts?
Well, I can probably remember it.
All right.
You might prompt me. But first of all, what I would say, Annie Laurie, is that God does not answer prayer. Or we could say the gods do not answer prayers. But I always then go one step farther and say, however, some people, many people, actually benefit from prayer. Now, is there a contradiction between those two statements, that God does not answer prayer, but yet many people benefit from prayer? The answer is there's no contradiction because people benefit from prayer in the same way they benefit from meditation or contemplation or relaxation therapies. So there is benefit, but it does not come from the communication with God. It's physiological and biochemistry that results in some benefit from prayer. But the overwhelming evidence, both of what I call everyday experience and the actual experimental studies conducted in medical settings, all reach the definitive conclusion that the gods do not answer any prayers.
So it comes from oxygen, really. Just take a slow, deep breath in whatever form of prayer or meditation you're engaged in, and the brain will just feel better naturally for physical reasons.
That's correct. That the this goes back to Herbert Benson in 1970, published a little book about relaxation, nothing about prayer, and it was very popular, and it actually was the beginning of the movement promoting the relaxation therapies. So they do work, and to that extent, prayer works.
Although I would say prayer works. It's a form of wishful thinking or meditation that if you believe in it, it might make you feel better. But you could also feel better by taking a hot bath or reading a book or
jogging
or doing whatever secular thing you like to do that relaxes you as well.
I think that's true, but some people, as you know, many people grow up in a religious tradition, they're indoctrinated, and they just simply come to believe that prayer works, that God answers prayer, that they're going to be better off if they communicate with God and so forth. And that belief, the strength of that belief, I think, is what carries so many people to the conclusion that God is communicating with them.
I'm sure you're aware of the studies that show that for some people, prayer actually turns out worse. When people thought that they were being prayed for with intercessory prayer, some of them actually had worse medical results than a control group.
Yes, that's true, and it had to do with the fact that their expectations were not realized. And I think that occurs not just in the experimental studies, Dan, but I think that occurs in life. Sometimes people experience a terrible tragedy. A child dies, a beloved uncle dies, something happens, and despite the fact that these people were at one time sincere believers, they pretty much lose the faith, as you have said, because they come to realize almost instantaneously that it just can't be true that God would allow something so terrible to happen.
And I think there was also, I think it was out of Arizona, a study where basically when someone was told outright that they were being prayed for by strangers, I think they freaked out because they're in a medical setting. And why are you having people pray for me? It would create a lack of confidence in your medical care. And maybe that, you know, turned into worry. There's concern that the medicine's not going to work, so they're turning to something supernatural.
Well, then it increases the blood pressure rather than decreases it. Yeah.
Well, I think those are legitimate concerns. In fact, I don't have to see a physician very often, but it would upset me. The doctor said we need to pray over this. Mm-hmm. I think I'd find a different physician.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker.
We are talking with Professor Emeritus Brian Bolton about the inefficacy, hard to say, of prayer. And we're also going to talk about some of the Christian nation myths that he has debated when we come back with the last segment of Free Thought Radio.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
We're back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we're talking with Professor Brian Bolton, Professor Emeritus Brian Bolton, who has endowed the Graduate Student Essay Contest for the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and whose name will be on the foundation's new executive wing for our new building expansion, which will be finished next year. So Brian, during the break, you were telling us something really interesting there in Texas. You raise tortoises. Tell us about that.
I'm what's called a Chelonian herpetoculturist. Chelonian meaning turtles and tortoises, and herpetology, but herpetoculturist is someone who's engaged in keeping and raising. I have two groups. One are the African leopard tortoises, larger tortoises from Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, and then I also raise a small central U.S. box turtle, the ornate box turtle. A few years ago, I was raising over 100 a year,
Wow. Hatching
and raising, and now, I've gotten older, it's gotten to be too much work, but I still probably produce about 2 dozen a year.
It's a
great hobby. They're fascinating animals, but that's true of whether it's snakes or lizards or rabbits or chickens. The tremendous diversity and expression of life is just fascinating when you study one particular segment, and that's what I've done.
And you're in a good climate for tortoises.
This is tortoise climate, but it can't even be too hot for them. They have to get out of the sun and into the shade, too.
Well, Charles Darwin would approve.
He most certainly would. In fact, I think one of the stories is that he took one of the small Galapagos tortoises back to England and kept it there for a few years.
By the way, do you know that there is a tortoise at the U.S. Supreme Court? On one of the pediments outside, alongside of Moses, is the tortoise and the hare, Aesop's Fables. So.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know it, but tortoises are everywhere. Turtles and tortoises are on every continent except Antarctica, and they are part of the myth and lore and the religions of many earlier peoples.
Now, speaking of myth and lore, this prevailing myth that we have such a hard time debunking, and which are the graduate students that you sponsored in our essay competition were asked this year to write about America, why it is not a Christian nation. But this is something that you've actually debated. And you were over at Texas A&M recently or a few years ago debating this issue, weren't you?
Yes, I was. Yes, I was. And I wrote an article for Free Thought Today. Gosh, that was, what, 10, 12, 15 years ago. And I think I've published a few other statements. It is a myth that we simply cannot seem to eradicate. And one of the real problems is a man named David Barton, who is also from Texas. He's from Aledo, just south of Fort Worth. He has been a pain in the neck because he misrepresents history. He's not an historian, but he has made a career out of promoting the Christian nation myth. I think he has finally done himself in, though, because he published a book just last year titled The Jefferson Lies by a major religious publisher, and it was so full of errors that the publisher withdrew it.
Yes, that was...
The irony was that the criticism did not come from people like me, the free thinkers. It came from conservative Christian faculty members at Christian colleges.
Now, Brian... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think they brought him to an end. I think that he has been exposed as a fraud. Maybe that will stop some of that.
Yeah, although his stuff's all over the internet, and it's in other books, and it just, you know, comes up all the time. But now, when you, Free Thought Radio is now on a station at Texas A&M, and you debated, I think, a disciple of David Barton there?
That's correct.
And what was, how did that go?
Well, I thought it was, I consider all of my debates to be worthwhile and productive because I'm not an antagonistic, aggressive debater. I consider the debates really to be discussions, give and take with respect. So we got along fine. The fellow's name is Rick Green. He, at one time, a few years ago, was a Texas state legislator. Then he got in trouble, ended up just a few years ago punching an opponent in the face outside of an election headquarters. Then he ran for the state Supreme Court.
Oh, yeah, I remember this.
And barely lost. That was the frightening part. He barely lost. And the last I heard or read just a few months ago, he's now up in Kansas promoting some aspect of the Christian nation myth. But as you know, Kansas has really taken a conservative turn. In fact, one of the five winning essays in this recent competition was a young woman from Kansas mm-hmm. who wrote about the problems of
I really liked her essay.
So what can you say very briefly in about 60 seconds why America is not a Christian nation?
Well, the number one reason is the Constitution is a secular document. Also, the Declaration of Independence makes no specific statements about Jesus or Christianity, and even the references to God are very vague. In fact, one I like, nature's God.
Yeah, that was Thomas Jefferson and Thomas Paine, the deists, who thought God was equal to nature.
Well, I would go one step farther. If people want to believe in God, that's fine, but nature is the God, so I'd turn it around just a little bit. But Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Thomas Paine, Joel Barlow, and many others were not Christians. It's true that many of the lesser-known founders were, but that doesn't make the U.S. a Christian nation. All of the Supreme Court decisions that bear on, of course, the Constitution, say that separation of church and state is a fundamental principle and that in no case is this a Christian nation. And that's why it's so annoying when we know now that in the last few months, or the last few years, seven states have passed initiatives opposing or not allowing Sharia law to be implemented. The Constitution doesn't allow Sharia law or biblical law or anything else to be implemented.
This is so ridiculous. You know, they just don't understand the Constitution, or they would never push for something like that.
It's a turf war is what it is.
Yeah. No,
but the summary statement is America was not founded to be a Christian nation. It is not now a Christian nation. And, of course, we hope it never will be.
Well, and getting these bright graduate students thinking about this topic, debunking it, involving them, as your essay competition does. When we did this particular year, we did ask them to write on Christian Nation. And these winning essays are in the current October issue of Free Thought Today. And if someone is not a member, that comes with membership. They can join us at ffrf.org, or they can ask for a sample issue and really celebrate these very brilliant and honest-thinking students who are concerned about the future of our country and theocracy.
And very appreciative, Brian. We can't tell you how appreciative the students are to be chosen as winners and then to get that substantial cash scholarship toward their education. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'm glad to do it. Thank you.
And I'm the one who gets the pleasure usually of calling the students, and they really are thrilled. So thank you, Professor Brian Bolton.
Thank you.
We also want to thank our devoted, dedicated engineer and producer, Dave McCann, who sits back there quietly pushing all the buttons, and our announcer, Buzz Kemper. This show is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin, and broadcasts here. You can find out all you want to know about our show, how to hear archives, or sign up for the podcast at ffrf.org/news/radio.
And we're on iTunes and easy to listen to. Ask for more information or just join us. You have a lot of information already, and we hope that we've persuaded you that this is an important cause, free thought, the promotion of reason, and defending the wall of separation. So join us at ffrf.org and tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday